Accession number 19989, Reel 2.
Mr. Haraway, Reel 2. You were telling me you'd received a letter, I think it was from the MO, about your...
Yeah, this was long after I'd been immolated.
Right.
It was from Colonel, I forget off his name, but at Connaught Hospital. And was it Woking? Sorry, I think. But I've got the letter, which I couldn't show you any time. But, and they were, incidentally, before that, leading up to it, the this tapeworm, you see, I was playing football, was at a football match, and I just passed out. No reason at all. I just went out. I was unconscious for a number of hours, and next thing I knew, I woke up in hospital with the MO there. And he carried out various tests and all this. And that was at Brayley. I'd been in there a couple of weeks, and I was sent to Merritt Hospital to see the medical specialist there. And I was only in Merritt for about 3 days, and I was sent back to Brayley. And they said that I had this tapeworm business, apparently, going into it, I will not bore on you, it went into, the tapeworm dies, but it affects itself and forms another head. Well, the old head of the tapeworm forms a cyst, and it travels around the body. And apparently, if it hits a nerve centre, you just pass out. And this is what it was. At the time, they couldn't find out what it was all about. And I was discharged from hospital, went back to normal duties. Oh, that was the end of 1933. And we moved to Brayley then. And at the end of 1930... No, just a moment, let me... Yes, that's right, 33. And I was playing football. And I went out like a light for no reason at all on the ground. And that's when it all started. And this, and eventually, I got back to duty. And we moved from Brayley. I did the march from going to the Northwest Front up to Rasmac.
To Rasmac.
And we only marched from Banu to Rasmac, which is a 5-day march, but most of it was uphill. And just after we got up there, I passed out again. And that was the beginning of the end. Because I was taken into the hospital, and the MO was sitting on the bed where I was, talking to me. And I remember him saying, "Now, do you get any warning of these attacks?" And I just said no, and I went out like a light again. It looked just like that. Next thing I knew, I was up for medical board and sent home. Spent 11 weeks in Netley, Royal Victor Hospital at Netley, and then discharged, medically unfit.
And this is all due to this tapeworm?
All due to the tapeworm.
Could they have done something to get rid of it? Get rid of the cyst?
The old point, no. Look. There's a bruise here, but see that mark?
Yes.
They took one of the cysts out there for medical examination. But that's all. I don't know what that bruise got there. Mm. But,
So it's in your left lower leg where they made an incision to take a cyst out?
Yeah. Mm. And they took it there. And then afterwards, I had a number of letters. Oh, what the heck was that? Colonel somebody at... the Connaught Hospital, Woking, and apparently this disease caused by the, or I don't know if disease, but complaint, caused by the tapeworm, it was the cysticercosis, they call it. And he was apparently looking into this, finding out the causes and the whys and the wherefores and whatnot. And he asked me a lot of these questions that, well, the things that I've told you that about it. And you drink your tea. You take that off and I'll show you the letter. It might give you an in.
When you were serving in India, did you know of any other men in the band or in the battalion who had trouble with tapeworm as you did?
No, I don't think I do. I knew these people, Stinson was A company, but at that time I didn't know that they were affected in the same way. I had no idea about that. Because, I mean, say, normally, if you realise you've got it, you go report sick with it and you get treated for it. And to give the stuff they used to call blackjack, thick, that you had to swallow, which is supposed to have killed
the
infection sort of thing. That was all. But that's all I did know about it.
But you were fit when you were in Guernsey. You had no trouble at all.
Oh, no, not at all. I didn't have any trouble at all. In India, I've been out there over seven years before. Apparently, it takes time for the tapeworm business to develop. And this is all I can say about it, not being medically trained or medically minded even.
You were saying that at Guernsey, you were kitted out with your own tailored uniform.
Yeah.
And the boots are too big, but you got used to them. That there are about 16 boys in the...
About 12 in Guernsey.
About 12 in Guernsey. You were allowed 16, but there are about 12. That one thing you did, quite a lot of PT to bring you up to, you know, a good level of fitness. What else did you do while you were in Guernsey? What other training did you get?
Well, we were trained a band, you see. We were being taught music.
By the corporal?
Well, supposed to be an NCOs, yes. That under instruction of what we used to call band practice. But it was all instruction, that was all, from 9 to 12 in the morning.
So it's 3 hours of band practice every morning.
Individual learning there, boys, you see, most of them. But the rest were in with the band. And the 3 to 4 in the afternoon. But in India, out there, it was 9 to 12 in the morning, 2 to 4 in the afternoon, and 5 to 6 in the evening.
So a lot longer in India.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We had a different type of bandmaster, that's why. And there was no physical training there as such in the evening. If we did any physical training, it was from about 7 until 5:30 in the morning.
So you'd start the morning with a bit of limbering up and...
After a time.
Yes.
That was all it was.
Well, how did they actually teach you music while you were in Guernsey? What was the method? Did they just give you an instrument and...
Well, an instrument, and you had NCOs in charge of your practice, isn't it? And would be instructing you and telling you sort of how many beans made five, why this and why that. But more so, it was more intensive out in the 1st Battalion.
Mm. What was your instrument when you first started?
Clarinet.
Did you stick with that all the way through?
Pardon?
Do you stick with the clarinet?
I had a clarinet and saxophone. And, the saxophone after a clarinet was simple. It was, a lot of the fingering was the same, but, well, you just took it as it came, that's all. Mm-hmm. But being your work, you didn't look at it that way. The clarinet was a difficult instrument to learn, but at the same time, it was, can I say, more of a musical instrument than a lot of the others.
Were you taught how to read music at an early stage?
Oh, yes, yeah. Of course, and you finished up by telling other people how to do it. It's passed on sort of thing, you know.
Did you find that you picked it up quite easily?
Well, when I was in Guernsey, no. It was difficult because the instruction there was not as intensive as it was in the other battalion. Now, when we got out there, we had NCOs that would sit with you while you were practicing or chewing. You'd have certain tutors on your stand, and you'd be playing first, and he'd point out to you where you've gone wrong or what it should be, this, that, and the other thing. And eventually, I was doing it myself, teaching them. So it was passing, it was an endless wheel sort of thing, passing it on to, from one to the other. If you were in any doubt at all about it, you could ask if any questions, and this was the best way. I passed the test for in 1930, what we say would it be? 1932. For you had to pass a board of three band masters to qualify to go to the School of Music for an 18 month or 12 or 18 months intensive course.
Would that be at Nella Hall?
Yeah. Well, I passed that there. I had three band masters. But I never got there. I was invalided before I could get. You had to wait for the vacancy, you see. But this that was all part of it.
Yeah, going back to the early days, when you arrive in the army, a lot of people find that it's a shock to the system coming under military discipline. Did you find that it was a shock?
Definitely. Mm. I think homesickness is the worst disease you can suffer from, I think. Oh. This is the point. And it, it took me, well, like most of us, we were only boys, youngsters, really. Mm. And it just takes a week or two to get used to it. Mm. The fact of being moved from home into a barrack room and with 12, 15 other people in the room and things like that, it's a blow to your system sort of thing, you know. It's something you've got to get used to. That was one of the worst things, I think, was
suddenly moving away,
readjusting, that was all.
You said it took 2 or 3 weeks, or how long did it take you? Were you, you know, how long was it before you were reasonably happy and adjusted?
Well, I couldn't really name a period, but it didn't take long, because being young, I think your system adjusted itself sort of thing.
You're more adaptable.
Yeah. Rather, had I been, say, 25 or 30, it would have taken a damn sight longer. That's all.
Was there a sort of routine, standard working day in Guernsey?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, always.
So you start with reveille. What time would you have reveille?
Well, in the summer, reveille was 6 o'clock, and in the winter, at 6:30.
So, reveille, and then what happens?
Breakfast would be about 7:30, and then you'd have to clean your room and get everything tidy and all that, and at 9 o'clock, you'd start your band practice.
What did you do between reveille and going to breakfast? That's an hour, isn't it?
Prepare your room, make the beds and all this sort of thing. They had to be made up regimental style, as per book and all this sort of thing.
In a bed block.
Yeah, this is a thing. And
were you taught to do that, or did you have to just watch the others?
Well, the old point about it is, if you had any chums, they'd show you how to do it to start with.
Yeah.
And like I say, it's an endless wheel. One would show the other, and it would go on like that. Mm. That's all.
Were you well looked after by the more senior boys in the barrack room?
Well,
did they take care of you?
I wouldn't say that. You know, it's a more or less, I think the biggest thing was adjusting yourself to it, if you follow, because I don't think it's anything worse than youngsters, because they've got their own ends sort of thing. But when I finished a corporal at RASMAC, and I was in charge of the boys, we had about 12 or 16 up there, I looked back and I thought to myself, well, they used to treat a boy as, well, a necessary evil sort of thing. And I think to myself, well, I've been through it, I know how I felt, and I know how they must feel. So I try to make it easier for them and all this. But I don't think I was in charge of them long enough to do what I wanted to do, because I was invalided at home. But I think I made a bit of difference, because since that, I've met a couple here then one lived down at St. Austell and around here, and they're quite, you know, look back on it. And one I wrote, he's just died, Woodhouse. I don't know whether you've heard of him from the others, but he was a boy in the band. He finished up a band sergeant in somewhere else. He lived at Helsham, just outside Helsham, and he died last month. But in one of his letters, he said to me, he said, at least, he said, you were one of the NCOs that treated the boys as human beings. So I thought to myself, well, that's something. A little something, that was all.
Does this mean that you were not treated as a human being when you first arrived?
Pardon?
You were not treated as a human being when you first arrived.
Well, the old point about it is, I think in the in those days, I don't know, I can't speak for now, but the band boys were treated, say, as a necessary evil, if you follow what I mean. They weren't, yeah. They were human beings, sort of thing, you know, this is the point. And the common name for them, they used to call them band rats. But since Newman, he was a boy with me, and he, as I say, he was a lieutenant colonel to finish with it in Australia. I got letters from him, and he showed me, told me then that he'd introduced, did away with the band boy and introduced him as apprentice musician.
He said, a different status altogether.
It makes it sound better, doesn't it?
It does make it sound better.
This is it. And that's, he told me all about that, you see.
So you're up at 6 or 6.13, and an hour to sort yourself out and get the barrack room clean, then breakfast. And then after breakfast, another hour to get the room tidy and then start
band
practice.
Yeah.
Until midday. What happened at midday?
Well, midday until, let me see. Of course, your midday meal then.
Yes.
But I don't know whether it was 12:30 or 1 o'clock. Well, in Guernsey, that's going back. Mm. But, and then afterwards, your midday meal. And then, of course, I can only speak in Guernsey because I was a boy the whole time I was there. And a 1:45, you paraded in PT gear, and the company orderly sergeant marched you to the gymnasium and handed you over to the instructor there, the PT instructor, and you were there, suffered grief and pain for 3/4 of an hour, and then back to the barrack room afterwards, and practice from 3 to 4, and the rest of the day was your own.
What could you do the rest of the day when it was your own?
Well, go up to the canteen, and there's to play snooker and billiards on the table and in the canteen and all that. And during the summer months, you could go up on cricket, playing cricket or football and that up on the sports fields. This is it.
Were you allowed out of barracks after the working day was over?
Yes. Mm. You were, but a boy had to be out. He had to be back in the barracks again by 9 o'clock. His bedtime was 9 o'clock up to the age of 18, and he wasn't allowed to smoke.
Was that rule observed?
In most cases, yes. Occasionally, you'd get the bigger boys, you know, the older ones, that was 17s and going 18, and they would go out what they used to call a spit and a draw, up into the toilets. But it had to be done undercover, sort of thing.
What would happen if you were caught?
Well, it was up to the NCO in charge of them. Really, it was a chargeable offence. But it never came to that. Not to my knowledge. You'd threaten them and all this sort of thing. Pack it up. Or don't let me catch you.
That's the essential rule, isn't it?
Yeah.
Not to be caught.
The prime offence in the army is being caught. So that's all there is.
What could Guernsey offer you if you went out into Guernsey, out of the barracks?
Well, there was a picture house, and there was two tea rooms. One was Palmer's Cafe. I forget the other one.
Were you on reasonable terms with the local
population?
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, it's quite quite pleasant people out there. I mean, for what little contact we had as boys we had with them, but a lot of the battalion had girlfriends out there, and that sort of thing. This was the whole point about it. We went back in 1974 on holiday there. Boyfriend, friends of ours.
Did you find it had changed a lot?
Definitely.
It had changed.
I mean, you see, Fort George itself now is now a housing estate. There's bungalows up there. And I went up there. We went for a walk on a Sunday morning up there, and we were standing on what was Fort Field. And a fellow that lived there, he came in and he says, "Oh, you interested in this?" And he started telling me about it. So I says, "Here, to tell you something." I said, "I'm not trying to be smart." I said, "But you see where you're standing?" I said, "That used to be about the centre of the football field." I said, "This was the football field here." And I said, "And up there was a hockey field, hockey pitch and that." "Is that so?" He said, "That, of course." And he got me talking about that. But it's funny, little things. little things like that come back when you're talking to them. Like,
how did you get on with the army food? What did you think of that?
I'm not going to tell you, but
you're not going to tell me.
You might be a no. It's something that you say you've got to eat it or leave it, and that's it. You either mind you, sometimes. I must say, in India, we couldn't really grumble about it. Whatever you had, it was sustaining and that sort of thing. It wasn't luxury, but it wasn't very often that you left the dining hall feeling hungry, put it that way. It was enough from one meal to another.
But in Guernsey, it was different.
Yeah. Oh, we had two cooks in our company in headquarters. One was called Charlie Polkinghorn, and the other was Toby Thomas. I think they were both road sweepers before they joined the army, and they made up cooks or something like that. That was the sort of thing. If you join the army, you say you're I'm a lorry driver. Okay, put him in the cookhouse. But that's the type of thing you thought of, you know.
You've been mentioning various NCOs, but you appear to have had only one actual meeting with an officer when you went to see the commanding officer on your initial interview. Did you see much of the officers when you were in Guernsey?
Well, you're running across them all the time. You had your company officer, you see.
Yes. Did he come round and inspect you and observe your training?
No, he didn't inspect you. He inspected the rooms when you weren't there.
Ah.
You see, this is why you had to be so particular that a room had to be as per picture sort of thing.
As regulation.
You had a photograph of a bed and the kit above it, steel helmet, overcoat folded and all this and all that. Well, the same thing, it was out in the 1st Battalion, you see. But very rarely in India did the company commander inspect the band rooms, because we were always there doing band practice. One, the whole band, and then the boys and the other who weren't with the band, actually in the band, they were practicing in another band room, so they didn't worry us at all.
Did you do any military training when you were in Guernsey?
Oh, not in Guernsey, no.
In Guernsey.
A boy at that time, it didn't even have a rifle. They weren't issued with a rifle until you were 18. Or the Colt Battalion or attained the age of 18 years. But this is a... Then you... Well, you became... When you became a man, you went through all the rifle drill, training, firing and courses and such like. You were then a trained soldier, besides a bandsman.
Did you do any foot drill while you were in Guernsey?
Oh, yeah.
You did?
You did all that, even as boys.
Yeah. When did you do that? What time of day would you be doing that?
Well, usually about 12 to half past.
Right.
By a company sergeant major used to take us in front of the company lines.
So you had a half hour's drill parade before having your lunch?
Yeah.
Yeah. Was he a very fierce man, the company sergeant major?
Freddie Marks. I think his bark was worse than his bite. But, well, obviously the old thing about it is if people like the sergeant major, there must be something wrong with him. That's what it amounts to, doesn't it? But you find them usually they're reasonable enough. Well, I found it afterwards as an NCO, you had more contact with them. This is the point. But as boys, a company sergeant major was a being apart. He was a lower form of God, shall we say.
Had you ever done any training, paramilitary training, any of that sort, before you joined the army?
Not a thing. I left school at the age of 14, December 1924, and I joined the army in January 1925.
Had you been a scout or anything like that?
Oh, yes, I've been a scout.
Right.
Not a very brilliant one, though.
Do you think that when it came to the military training, that having been a scout was helpful?
Well, no, I don't really think so, because you're looking at a really different phase of life altogether. To start off with, you've got to adjust yourself that the fact is that barrack room is now your home, rather than coming here and going from one room to another in a house. If you were there, you were confined to that room. That was your room, and that's where you slept and everything else, except you went hitting the dining hall, and that's all. Well,
so you've done your time in Guernsey, you've done some drill, you've started to learn music, you've done physical training. Did you do any education? Do you remember doing that?
Yeah.
When was that done?
Well, the point was you did that on certain mornings, you see, 9 to 12. I got the third and the second class certificates in Guernsey, and I got my first class certificate in Lucknow.
Do you remember what you had to do in the education syllabus?
Well, I may say the point was the third class certificate was elementary, really. I mean, say a five-year-old could pass that. The second class certificate was a little more difficult. You had a book, and I remember the book that I was at that time was A Tale of Two Cities, which was right up my street, and I liked it. But when I went to the 1st Battalion and sat for the first class certificate, you had three books.
Do you remember what they were?
One was Lorna Doone, the other was The Life of Nelson, and the third was All Mortality. So three brilliant things. And I sat for my first class certificate in April, and I failed in one subject, geography, which was one of my best subjects. I took that was at Lucknow. And while we were in the hill station during the summer, in October, I had to take that one subject, and I passed that. So I got my first, and that was it.
Who actually did the teaching for the education?
Well, you had Army Educational Corps, but for the second and third class certificates, you had regimental instructors, corporals or a sergeant or something like that. But for the first class certificate, you had a WO1 of the AEC. That was it.
Was it like going back to school when you were doing the education?
Well, the whole point about it was we didn't mind that, because while you were going to school, you were dodging something else. That was the attitude, if you follow me.
So it was a welcome diversion.
Oh, yeah, welcome little break. Mm. And it's a funny thing. At Guernsey, we had a sergeant there called Appleton. And after the war, he came out of the service, and he was living up the road, practically next door to my sister. And he finished off his RQMS. And I used to have quite some fun with him, telling him what I thought of him. I said, I couldn't do it in the army, I'm telling you now. But we got on very well.
Did you have access to books generally? Was there a library you could use while you were in Guernsey or in
India? Well, there was a library, but just for newspapers, not as such as not a lending library. There was nowhere with books like that.
So there's a reading room.
That's all. Well, that's all you'd call it, isn't it? A reading room, the newspapers.
So there's somewhere quiet you could go and study if you needed to.
Well, actually speaking, you could do that in the room because most of the time there were very few people in the barracks.